Welcome to the Daily Path Podcast, where it's all about building an authentic life and business. I'm your host, Joe Winters Jr., and now for today's message. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Daily Path Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Winters Jr., and today I'm joined by Robert Dusa, who is the founder of Independent Strength Building Consulting, where he provides life coaching and workshops for at-risk youth and therapists. Through his work, Robert has served over 10,000 at-risk students and has presented over 50 workshops for therapists. Robert, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, great to be here, Joe. Appreciate you asking me to be on the show.
You're welcome. Thank you for joining me. So today I would like to talk to you about what you do to help at-risk students change their lives, how you've gone about finding schools or organizations you partner with to serve at-risk students, and any personal development practices you have for developing yourself as a leader. So please start by telling us what inspired you to serve at-risk students.
Well, first of all, you know, I'm a wounded healer. Both parents were abusive, alcoholic. I was a latchkey kid from the age of 14 in San Francisco, had to take the bus in San Francisco, and we were in Hunters Point, which is one of the worst areas of San Francisco, and I'd take like three buses to get to school. So I had to fight my way through, but I had this trauma, you know, that was built into me. And then I became an alcoholic, a drug addict, 24 years of that, had a family, did my education in between all of that somehow. But the last 18 months of my using at age 36 to 37, I went completely downhill, crashed and burned. And then I got sober. So I've been sober 26 years. And I always want to help young people. Thank you. I always want to help young people who have low self-worth, who've experienced repression. They have to repress their real selves, and they don't see their value. And so I just live to inspire and help young people see their potential. And that's such an engaging conversation to have to turn their light on.
Definitely. So at the age of 14, you began using drugs and alcohol, at the age of 14. And then you said at 36 or so,
36, I got sober.
36?
37, I got sober.
37. Yeah. So what would you say that, let me also ask, you mentioned that you started a family throughout that time as well as went back to school. So that was before 37.
Yep. Right. Yep. So it was a battle to try to, you know, stay on track. And then I would like maybe go 2-3 weeks without using, and then I just fall off. Mm-hmm. And with it, when you have an alcohol or addiction problem, you never know when it's going to hit. Like I would not make any plans to do this, and then all of a sudden it's 2 a.m. and I'm still not home.
What would you say were, whenever you was doing your best to stay on track and focus on school, focus on your family, and you would go weeks without using, and then all of a sudden you would use, like, looking back on it, what would you say are, you know, what were some of the triggers or the things or perhaps people or events that was contributing to you picking back up? And how did you then overcome that?
That was my time. You turned 37. It was definitely my trauma, you know, with complex post-traumatic stress disorder and an irrational home, you know, these feelings, with the way PTSD works, it's almost like grieving, like when you lose your mom. And I just lost my mom a month ago. But when you lose, somebody, thank you. Grief comes in waves unexpectedly. And that's the way PTSD works too. And you get triggered by, let's say my father was very loud and aggressive, you know, to hit me and all this kind of stuff. So any male who came at with that energy, immediately my memory, PTSD would jump up and instinctively try to protect me. So then I would lock up, you know, and so I felt so socially uncomfortable, you know, and I didn't feel like I could deal. So I had to learn how to deal with that because I was medicating to deal with those feelings. And then when I nearly died from that. And then when I got sober, I had to learn how to do that for real.
Speaking of nearly dying, you did mention to me that you had near-death experiences. Did all of your near-death experiences come while you were using?
No, I've had to use since then, which has been very interesting. But drinking and driving, falling asleep at the wheel on the freeway, on the Bay Bridge, San Francisco Bay Bridge, and waking up before I hit something. It's just like, I don't know, that's a miracle. Right. I shouldn't have drove like 500. There was at least 500 times I was like too drunk to drive. And too, you know, you don't think straight. But then when I got sober, when my father died, on the day my father died, which was 7 months of sobriety, I went to go contact my drug dealer to use. I was feeling really squirrely. I didn't know why. And I didn't know that my dad had died. So I go to this drug dealer who had been making $200 a day off me for like 18 months. And I hadn't seen him in 7 months. And I talked to him and he goes, what you want? And I told him and he goes, you know what? You're doing good. I'm not going to give you any. That right there saved my life. And then there was a near drowning accident. I was river rafting. I fell out of it at the top, bouncing against walls, broke my ribs, my knees, almost got a concussion, went to the hospital emergency. But I was underwater and I couldn't get to the surface. And I said, I guess I'm going to die here. And all of a sudden, this loud voice, and it was a woman's voice, close your mouth and hold on. So I followed those directions. 40 seconds later, I popped up and nobody claimed to have said that. That made me really feel like I was meant to be alive still and to keep on doing the work I was doing. That was about 6 years ago.
What would you say is one of the biggest lessons that you've learned from your near-death experiences that you tried to pass on to others?
God loves you. And God wants you to be here, and he wants to give you back your life. You're born into this world beautiful, and then things happen, and you learn to survive in your parents' house. You learn to survive in the world, but it's not really you. It's not really your best. You're surviving, right? But God's message to me is that you can do all things if you ask for healing, and if you listen to him or her, however you want to call it, you know, it works.
Amen. So you work with at-risk students. You know what it's like to come from the background. You've changed your life. You're working with at-risk students. What would you say are the top two challenges you see at-risk students that you're working with, struggling with?
It's usually their self-concept and other people's labeling of them.
So break each of those down for me, starting with self-concepts. You said they're self-concepts, correct?
Yeah, they're self-concept. Okay. Not seeing themselves as valuable. You know, like they've been told since they were little, whether overtly, like verbally, or by complete neglect, that they don't have value. And then when the school system does a lot of this, unfortunately. Because a lot of those young people also sometimes are not built intellectually for math and English and stuff, or they just completely tune out of it because in first and second grade, the teachers gave them such a hard time. So then they're labeled like no good, and then people want to cast them away. And one of the biggest challenges is that no one wants to fund saving kids. They want to just let them go. There's places to put them. Or just they'll be homeless, they'll be in prison, you know, and then focus on the kids that are doing well. So schools are not too well equipped to help these young people. So that's a real big thing, is reframing and teaching teachers and principals and definitely parents about how to support young people who are struggling with their self-concept.
That makes sense. So how does one's self-concept, in your experience, how does one self-concept of themselves manifest in their behavior? So let's say someone, you know, at risk, boy and girl, right? Like, or boy or girl, they believe they're not valuable and, you know, no one cares about them. How does that influence their behavior in their personal life and relationships with friends, significant others? Like, how does that influence their behavior?
We see a lot of young people who, they see that the avenues of civilization as it's set up, right? Get a job or go to college, get a job, you know, get a family, get a house, that system does not want them, or they can't function in that system. So they start looking outside the box, gangs, you know, sex trafficking, maybe getting in an abusive relationship with someone who does have money, but that abuses them, you know, so they start reaching for, they have to find a way to survive. So they're in survival mode instead of thriving mode. And one of the keys to our work is helping young people become thriving. But you mentioned about beliefs. Beliefs are very important, right? If you believe you can do something, I can't talk you out of it. If you believe you can't do something, I can't talk you into it. So focusing on beliefs is really powerful. For example, like, nobody likes me. Well, let's look at that. Let's unpack that, right? And no, I like you, right? And then who else, you know, oh, this other person likes you. Yeah, you know, and you got to kind of help them see that. But helping a young person create a system of beliefs or a list of beliefs that they can then intentionally focus on, and then teaching them how to make that happen. But it also requires supporting them with coaching them on life skills, on how to do things like how to introduce yourself, how to manage your trauma. Right. But my theory of action is that if I can get you thriving, your trauma can start to go away almost by itself.
Right.
Because you're busy focused on thriving. You're having a good time. You're learning. You're winning in life.
Right. No, no doubt. No doubt. So now the second thing you said that you've noticed at-risk students that you work with struggle with is being labeled by others. So let's say that, you know, you have this at-risk boy or girl who they have been labeled since the first grade or second grade as troublemakers, or, you know, talk too much, or class clowns, or, you know, whatever label you want to throw on them. By the time they are young adults, you know, anywhere from 18 to 25, or let's say 14 to 25, how do you see the negative labels they have received influencing their behavior?
Well, they're going to start acting out. You want to see badass? I'll show you badass. Mm. See troublemaker? And another way to act out is, so oftentimes when they're child, right, and littler, adults do things to them at the adult time frame. Like they don't feed them, or, you know, they get mean to them, or they even kick them out of the house, right? So they have no control. So one manifestation is young people intentionally mess up so that they can be in control of when they leave, or they run away, or they run towards other things so that they have some control over their life. So one of the biggest ways that we counteracted that is, one, you got to build a beautiful relationship. So what does an infant need? Safety, security, and caring.
Right.
So you provide that with your own energy as you meet with them. It has to be authentic. You have to really feel that, right? And then one of the best things that we ever did was we gave every kid a strengths test. What are your strengths? And then what are your passions? And then building from that. I can talk more about that, but I just wanted to put that in there because that was critical, because there's evidence is required to change the beliefs that they're not, they don't have talent, or that nobody wants, that they can't make something of themselves. And we also really encourage their creativity and entrepreneurship, that no, let's find a business that you want to do, a hobby. You could do business with a hobby. What do you enjoy doing? So getting young people turned on was like the main thing.
So I would imagine once a student is in your coaching program, you're focused on helping them, you know, change their beliefs, or, you know, destroy negative beliefs they have, create better beliefs. You're helping them have a better self-concept of themselves, as well as removing any negative labels that they may have accepted in their lives. So walk me kind of through the process you like to use, or that you use within your organization when a student or students come in, right? Like you mentioned having to, you give all of them a strengths finders test. So like, how does that work? Like you give a test at the beginning, and then from there you start meeting with them weekly, monthly. Like what does the arrangement look like? What does it include? Just kind of walk us through that.
Yeah, you're not guaranteed another visit actually with the young person. So you got to almost take it as far as you can in the first session oftentimes. Because the people that, so they have basic needs that are unmet.
Right.
Drug dealers, abusive partners, right? Gang members have ways of meeting those needs. They see the vulnerability of this person and they want them to be in their gang. They'll give them, if they need family, they'll give them that. They need to make money, they'll give them that. So what people have to recognize is that they have to be better at meeting those needs, or at least trying to, and really authentically trying, so that the young person believes, oh, they're cared about. Right. So that's number one. So bringing that energy to this situation. Talking to young people is not rocket science. It's more like brain science. First thing, you want to treat them like they have an adult brain, because they actually already are making decisions. They can run away. You know, they make decisions whether or not to do something or do something. They have choices that they want to make. So if you treat them like they don't know anything, that's not going to work.
Right.
Especially if they already don't feel comfortable with adults trying to talk to them, because somebody really didn't talk to them in the right way and made them shame them, label them. And so like, they're already not looking forward to the conversation. So you gotta be really chill. You gotta have like little games, maybe things that they can play with their hands, snacks, stuff. And you gotta see if there's any basic needs that need to be met right that minute. So right. This is building rapport, showing that you care.
Right.
But once you get to that point, then you wanna start asking them like, you know, what do they like about what they're doing? You know, let's say they're smoking weed. What do they like about that? And as you ask that question, in the answer, underneath is the basic need. So, for example, if you ask me, one of my main reasons for smoking weed was to medicate my anger management, that I wouldn't flash and go off in the classroom.
Mm.
What's my need? My need is to manage that. So what's my coaching opportunity? Coach me on how to manage my anger, how to communicate with calm power, and how to advocate properly for my needs and to acknowledge that I have them. So that's my coaching point. But in the beginning, we're not there yet. So we need to draw them out more, because I don't want to solve something unless I'm solving the right thing. So I draw them out, then that makes them feel comfortable. Then I ask them to look at, what are the negative sides of what you're doing? Is there anything that you're concerned about with smoking weed? And that's really critical. It's not what do I think is wrong with it. Is there anything that you're experiencing? So keeping it really on them, you know, and keeping it like, and then being very non-judgmental. And then as they talk, ask them everything that they know about it. You say it's affecting your breathing. So what do you think is causing that? You know, and drawing them out about that. And then when they get to the end of that's as far as they can go. And you want to give them affirmations. So you're giving affirmations. Hey, you look really nice today. You know, oh, that's a cool tattoo. You know, all the whole time, or, you know, the anger management thing. I'm really glad that you care about not hurting people. I appreciate that about you. I mean, so even though he's smoking weed to manage his anger, I want to acknowledge that this person is really trying to do some good things. You know, they're working on themselves. So then I'm going to get to the negative side, and then I'm back again the teaching side. Well, there's a little bit more to know about why marijuana affects your lungs. Would you like to know? I'm inviting permission to give information. Right. Then I got to go to a source that's reputable and have them look at it. And let's look at it together.
Right.
What I'm trying to do is inspire them to go, on the one hand, it's working for me. On the other hand, I'm not sure I want these side effects. And it's at that point, do you want to make a change of any kind? And if they want to make a change, and even if they don't, but if they want to make a change, I'm going to set a goal.
Right.
A goal of, like, say, only smoking 2 days a week. How? Playing basketball with my brother. And what's the reward? I'm going to put money in a jar. And I'm going to buy my brother some new shoes at the end of the month. Beautiful. Let's go. Oh, remember earlier you'd mentioned? Now I go back to the coaching point.
Right.
Because I need to support them to be able to achieve that goal.
Right.
Earlier you talked about it helped you manage anger. I think maybe we could talk a little bit about how you're going to do that sober. So then I'll do the same process. What do you know about? What's your ideas?
Right.
What worked for you in the past? Now there's a little bit more. And here's where I get the invitation to coach. Well, there's a little bit more to know about how there's some other ways that you can use calm power. Would you like to know? Yes. And it's so that whole interview is like an interview is structured to help them want to be coached by you.
Right.
And to receive coaching. So then when you do the coaching, then you coach up on that. And then the next time we meet, I say, hey, next time we talk, I want to talk about life stuff a little bit, if that's okay. Like what you want to do in the future. And then I give them the strengths test. And even if they didn't want to slow down on weed, I'll do the same thing. Okay. Hey, or I don't even want to talk about this, man. You know what? I don't have a problem. You know, okay. Can we talk about your life? Because to be able to give a young person the gift of what are they talented at? Yeah. What are they good at? And to then give them skills about how to get there and create a vision plan. So that's what we'll be doing. We give them the strengths test and then we blow that up. Talk about, so if we look at the top five strengths, and what I usually do is take the first strength, that's the very top strength, and say, and there's example, there's like some paragraph of description of it, and I'll have them read it and I'll say, can you give me an example when you've been like, say, very charismatic? Let's say it's charismatic is the first one. And just we'll talk through it because I want to illuminate that they have that strength.
Right.
And then I'll shift to an employer role. Wow. If I was an employer and they just had the one strength, if I was an employer, I think I would have you be C's. You know, you'd either be my marketing person or you'd be my salesperson, you know, or you'd be my my staff with that charisma, you know, or if they're not into business. You know, Martin Luther King Jr. was the greatest visionary speaker of all time. What's greatest charisma?
Yeah.
You know, Barack Obama has charisma. Michelle Obama has charisma.
Yeah.
You know, let's look at what you could do with charisma in the nonprofit sector. So depending on their passion, they want to make money. But anyhow, that's just the first strength. Then when I do the second strength, I go do the same thing. But now I go one plus two. Wow. Mm-hmm. If you have charisma and the ability to organize.
Wow.
Maybe you could create your own company.
Mm.
Maybe you could create your own nonprofit.
Right.
And add the third strength, et cetera, et cetera. And then after that, then we create a vision map. And then a backwards map of how to get to that vision. So let's say the vision is have their own nonprofit community center in West Oakland for young boys and girls to do something after school and to have a mentor and all this kind of stuff. And they want to have that because that's something that they could use. They could have used themselves and they actually have passion to make that happen now. So let's build a backwards map to get there. What's the last step? Master's degree. And what's the next step bachelor's degree. And then who do you need to know?
Right.
Then I use LinkedIn for them. I go all the way back to high school. What courses do you need to take right now? What kind of grade do you think you get? So I'm trying to build motivation to get engaged in school in this fashion as well. Backwards. So then they go, I better start paying attention to my grades and I need to know about this, etc. And then I'll use LinkedIn. Let's look for, let's say it's a woman, a Latina woman who has her own nonprofit. She went to UCLA. She has a master's degree. The young lady wants to do the same. She wants to go to UCLA. Find someone on LinkedIn who has a master's degree from UCLA, who has her own nonprofit, that's a Latino woman, and have the young lady write to her and say, this is my plan. I think what you're doing is amazing. Could you give me some suggestions about what course to take? So teaching young people how to network.
Wow.
You got to have safety from 3 to 7 p.m. every day, a safe place to go with a mentor match and something that reflects your strengths and passions.
Right.
So she should go then volunteer at a community center herself or work at a community center or intern at a nonprofit so that person who's running it could say, you really got a lot of talent. You should do this. Oh, guess what? I am going to do this. You know what I mean? Because privileged kids know people that can hook them up.
Right.
For example, my son and daughter, my two youngest, they Stanford law degree, PhD at Berkeley. It's like, that's not me, but now they will be able to hook up their kids easily.
Right.
So a lot of young people in the inner cities and people who are marginalized and poor, they don't have that.
Right.
So we have to teach them how to advocate. And then I always tell the young folks that if you have street strengths and education strengths, because you have inside perseverance. You've got some street strengths in you. You've gone through some stuff.
Right.
Look at you. Look what you've accomplished. Right. You're actually better off.
Yeah.
Because you weren't just dropped off at a school. You know, you didn't have it just that easy.
Right.
you had to fight, and you had to keep showing up even though mm-hmm. mom was coming home, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. and let them capitalize on that resilience. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. So it sounds like you do some really great work that is where you are really coaching kids every step of the way, as long as they're giving you that permission. I love how you started with the, you know, you should try to take it all the way the very first time you meet with them, because you don't know if you're going to get to meet with them again. That is so true. You know, you really don't. And so I think that it's inspiring and insightful to share that the first time you sit down with them, you approach it with the mindset and the heart set that you approach it with. Now, to based on what you're saying, to my understanding, you went into the second session or the second time you meet with a student to give them the strength test, correct? And yep. then from the, and you know, a big part of that strength test is, you know, looking at their vision for the future, skills that they have, you know, looking to create a life plan to take them from where they are to where they want to go. And then I would imagine from that point is just consistently building a relationship with them, coaching them, et cetera, et cetera. Am I missing something there?
Pretty much on it. So when I was running the program in Oakland, I had 15 life coaches, and I picked people who had the talent to motivate and who cared and who had amazing hobbies and who represented the community. Right. We had LGBTQ, we had Black and Brown, you know, we had Asian, we had everybody that could be, that the kids would want to go talk to. You have to shine.
Right.
You have to have something. You have to be kind of special, cool, right?
Right.
But then when it comes down to it, it's about coaching on the basic skill, whatever skills are necessary, coaching on how to network, coaching how to introduce yourself, coaching on resume building, coaching on organizing your time so you can get things done, coaching on having a conversation with that teacher who keeps disrespecting you, how to do one-on-one conversation with that teacher or with that parent.
Right.
And sit down and go, I really would like to do good in your classroom, and I was wondering if we could talk after school. And they would be in the example. Right. And talking to young people about being the change agents in their family, you know, stuff like that. But so what we did, especially during the pandemic, what we did is we created a lot more programming for career development. And because young people, because the Black Lives Matter movement was going on as well, and because of the pandemic and things just were completely in disarray and looked like the system was sort of certainly wasn't working. It wasn't looking good for young people. So you guys have the power and the ingenuity. And so if you want to make a nonprofit, or you want to make music in a certain way, or you want to make a product or make a business that you think would work, so that, because they don't want to work. Most of them didn't want to work a regular job, you know, 8 to 4, forget that, right? They needed something that they wanted to do,
right,
that they could get excited about.
Right.
So it's been really inspiring them and setting up this practice. So we created that intern program for Black girls, intern program that, you know, that were struggling with behavioral issues. And so that's how we got the referral. So this, what I'm talking to you about was a school-based life coaching program.
Okay.
What I'd love to be able to do, which I think is even more effective, is to have these young people come to an adventure kind of camp at the ocean, hiking, and we'll just do some stuff and build a lot of community between each other, and right. So they can calm down because they're not in the city. And then we'll do some life coaching stuff. Everybody will be trained to do life coaching, but that's my vision. And then we'll inspire them. And then when we send them back into the community, they'll be like, I got a plan. Teacher, I want to know about this. You know, I need to know this. I need to know that. These are my friends that I need. These are friends aren't going to go. I'm not going to go the direction these other friends have gone. I realize that now. I need friends who are going to go with me on my journey.
Right. Right. You know, I really appreciate the fact that not only are you helping at-risk students change their life, but you're really mentoring and coaching them on how to advocate for themselves. You know, being someone who comes from a disadvantaged background myself, in my experience, the more I was able to advocate for myself, the better off I was. The more I was able to advocate for myself, the better I did in school, the better I did in sports, the better I did in the workplace, in entrepreneurship, in relationships, in my fitness. Like literally, I can't think of an area of life where being able to advocate for yourself makes life worse. It only makes it better. So I really appreciate the work that you're doing. Speaking to how you have, you know, you've ran coaching programs where you've brought on other life coaches, I'm sure you have a lot of insight for those who are a life coach looking to work with students, whether that be at-risk students or not. But for the sake of this conversation, what would you say is the most common misconception held by life coaches that want to serve at-risk youth?
Well, they forget that they're working with a human being. And if they can just install what they know into them, that they'll be fine. But why don't they take it, right? It's the art of building rapport and holding space and encouraging initiative. You know, I wanted to ask you a question. Was there someone in your teenage years that took you under their wing that if they hadn't have been there, I'm not sure.
Absolutely. Two men. One came into my life at 14. The other came into my life at 16. They both have served as mentors and now great friends.
Yeah. And you know what? That's one of the critical things. So if one of the things to do is to become that person in this young person's life. And, you know, young people might push you away. Oh, man, everyone else has dropped me. So why should I even listen to you? You know, blah, blah, blah. But if you keep showing up, if you keep caring, you know, like it might take you three times before the young person will actually start opening up. You know, I got some snacks. You want? Maybe they'll come just because of the snacks. Maybe they'll come just because you play cards with them while you talk. You know, and you make it chill, you make it relax, and you don't judge. So I think doing the sideways stuff really works. For example, that's where I get the whole idea of the venture camp. But in a school setting again, let's say that you had a class, an after school class where you refurbished furniture from thrift stores. But what it really is going to be is a life skills class, but it's going to be kind of on the side. So you just keep it chill, music's playing. And after a while, if they feel comfortable, they start talking. Man, you know what my mom did the other day? And then there's room for this.
Right.
And it's not so in my face. You know, it's like, and then they ask when they want, you know what, Rob, you seem pretty cool. Like, can I talk to you afterwards? My old man's doing some stuff and I don't know what to do about it. Well, that took time for them to trust me. They had to be in my space. I had to be in their space where they got to that point. You know, so one misconception is that things happen in a time-based fashion. No, things happen when they do happen.
Things happen when they do happen. And from what you're saying, what the life coach should be thinking instead is should be focused on building rapport. Just, you know.
Absolutely. And having a good time. Like people get defensive easy, right? And especially triggered people, such as people with PTSD. So it has to be super chill. And if they're playing, then they're not even thinking about any of those things anymore.
Right.
So get people playing with you. So you've got to be playful in a way. Mm. Not all, you know, but I mean, in a sense, you've got to be not so serious.
I definitely agree with that. That's something I've had to work on myself, not being so serious. What advice would you recommend to a life coach or a mentor, you know, or anyone that's trying to build rapport with another, but they tend to take things so seriously? What advice would you give them to not be that way?
Well, one thing that a lot of people, unfortunately, you know, it's the way people are, we're all a product of where we came from, how we were raised, how we were treated, and all of this thinking that we do, right? And whatever we read in social media. And like, if they get into like an angry social media conversations a lot, you know, and judgmental, you know. So one thing I would say it's for all life coaches to do is it's not about you. Mm. So don't make it about you. Mm. Then what do you do? Then what you want to do is work upon yourself. You want to have your own life in order. You want to be chilled and taking good care of yourself so that you can be fully present. Mm. to give to this young person. And it's not personal if they don't want to deal with you. It's just maybe for whatever reason, right? But you don't want to take it personally. But if, let's say, if you get you're coming across a lot of resistance, and you're a new life coach, or your clients don't really follow you, you could stop and ask, if you're really brave, what am I doing that you don't like? Or what could I do that would work, that would allow me to be your coach? Mm. And if you're brave enough to ask that question, you're going to learn a lot about yourself and stuff. Mm. But you have to really work on your own stuff, you know, so mm. that you can really be able to give to others. You know, look at Maya Angelou, great example of someone who did a lot of work on herself, so that when people came into her realm, she was just gracious.
Mm. Yeah.
Because she'd done the work.
Right.
So a lot of times, folks, we all are I started out this way too. I needed to be okay. And when I started working with young people, I was not messing up. I was doing something valuable, mm-hmm. but I wasn't healed. And it was a growing process to get to a point where, hey man, you know, it took me about 10 years where I really had to look in the mirror and go, it's not about you at all. You got to quit making it about you in order to be more effective as a life coach. You've got to go take care of your issues somewhere else. Make sure that's all done so that you can fully be present for other people.
You know, I agree with that. I once heard from Jim Rohn. He said that one thing that people mess up or get wrong is that they tend to believe that I can screw off in private, do what I want in private, and then behave in public in a you know, good fashion. I'll be okay in public regardless of what I do in private. When in fact it's take care of what you need to in private so it serves you in public. And that's really what I'm hearing you speak to, and I completely agree with myself. How we invest our time.
Detector.
Absolutely. How we invest our time when we're by ourselves will have a great impact on how we show up in public. And so I really appreciate you saying that, and really can't speak to that enough, because it's I unfortunately in the past made that mistake of believing that what I did in private did not correlate to how I would show up in public. And of course, it took some maturing for me to learn. And I guess really for my listeners, I want this to be a part of the interview. The entire interview is great. Hopefully you're learning a lot, but this is a very important part of the interview. Like, the things you do in private will influence who you are in public. So, you know, don't make that mistake.
I love that. And there's a concept called inner engineering from India. It's a scientific practice of being the best human being possible. And it includes like what you think about, what you eat, your attitude, you know, how to create wellness within yourself, right? And one thing I would also ask everyone to consider is, what kind of life do you want to have? What do you want your life to be about? Your life is a gift. And it's not guaranteed you'll get it to keep it tomorrow. So it's really important too. So how are you living your life, and living your life to the best for yourself? And I don't think you're really happy if you're two-faced. You know what I mean? And look at that, right? It's not going to work out. It's going to fall apart. If it's not a foundation built solidly. If you're not working on the inner self at the same time, if you're not trying to walk your talk, and you can't give what you ain't got. So you got to get, you've got to receive love, caring, inspiration in order to give it. You've got to receive healing in order to give it. And I'll tell you this, the more the work I've done on myself, it gave me more tools to see what this young person needed, to offer a different tool to this person, having a myriad of tools based upon what I've worked on for myself. And I think I think young people appreciate humility and ownership when you do make a mistake. Like, say you get a little too pushy on somebody and you see that they're backing down or they're shutting down on you. you have to back up. I apologize. You know what? I'm doing too much here. Let me, what do you want to talk about? You know, you have to find, you've got to really pay attention to how you are interacting with other people. And then ask the young person if everyone's like avoiding you, then the common denominator is you're in part of that conversation. So you might want to take a look at yourself. But it's all in all fairness, we're all trying to do, we all get a chance to have a great life, and we all can heal, and we all can and thrive. And everyone who's doing anything, I want you to thrive in all ways and have a balanced life, right? You know, family is really important, you know, as well as your friends and your hobbies and investing in your money and investing in things that you need. But you don't need a whole bunch of stuff, right? But you do need certain things. And relationships are what you get to take with you at the end. You know, how were you as a person?
Absolutely. For the life coach who wants to serve at-risk youth and they're just starting out, how would you recommend they go about getting their first few paying clients? Like, I know you mentioned for you, your arrangement was more of like a school-based program, which makes sense because if they're at risk, 9 times 10, they probably don't have money, right? And I know that's not necessarily all cases, but how would you recommend to the life coach that wants to serve at-risk youth to go about getting paying clients or getting clients and being compensated for it, even if it's not coming directly from the person they're coaching?
Right. So you got to take a look at, you know, what avenues of funding streams are out there. So if you're in sports, for example, and I guarantee you can ask anyone who's a coach of anything, you have to be good at the psychology aspect of when a person starts to resist you, when they have low self-worth, you know, when they need to get refocused. So, but you look at sports, and so sports teams like football teams, baseball teams, the schools themselves, maybe you would get hired as an assistant coach. So you got to know something about the sport, right? But you have an opportunity to touch lives, and then you can develop yourself. I mean, this is low level. Let's say a person's really just starting out. Right. They happen to be a good baseball player or basketball player, and they become an assistant coach on a junior high or a high school. And you're really doing character development, to be honest. If the greater character development you do, the greater your team will perform. So there's a lot of money to be made in sports psychology, like keeping people. How does a pitcher settle themselves down, or someone who's about to take a shot? What's the mindset so that they really flow freely, right? And help them get into the psychology of it. From a business standpoint, or, you know, maybe like there's lots of coaching jobs on LinkedIn, right, that you can look for. But I would say you really want to keep, it's actually pretty simple. It's right. Not that complicated. If you know how to build a relationship with other people and you really care about people and you can add value to their lives, right, and you can teach them and you know how to keep things really simple and teach them skills, you can get started. You don't have to spend a lot of money to become a coach.
Yeah.
What's really critical, though, is to maybe be mentored by a very good coach.
Right.
Find like someone who is a woodworker in the past. You grew up as a child. Your father was a carpenter. You know, he mentored you on how to do everything with the woodwork. And he was really good. You're blessed because you could also learn how to make wood like that. The same with coaching. As far as the schools go, but I already said earlier, it's really sad to me that there's not a lot of people caring about reaching out to these young people.
Right.
But if you were a person that wants to work in education, you could become like, say, a teacher assistant. Maybe you could work in an after school program and you get your feet wet. You know, that's on the low levels. In terms of making really good money, you know, that's definitely in sports. And then if there's a well-funded entrepreneur training program, and you could become an entrepreneur training coach or a business coach for young people, you would have to just look around and see who's doing this. And you know what? You could also create your own model, your own program, and then see if you can get grant funded to do your program. And maybe you would do your program on the side. There's a lot of great nonprofits out there who are doing great work. This coaching aspect, a lot of people know how to set things up, But having a good coach on the team would be really valuable. So if you really feel like you're a great coach and you can get ideas across to people in a very simple way, and because you have to really make it simple, because the mind's going all over the place, and it has to be really engaging. If you're going to have somebody do something, they have to be really involved in it.
Right.
So keeping it really simple, then you could make your own nonprofit and get funded yourself, or start your own business.
Right.
But when it comes to, you know, making money with at-risk youth, it's not going to be a lot of money, you know. But if you're doing it in sports, or if, let's say you're doing it at a expensive rehabilitation place like rehab, and you could be a life coach at a rehab for wealthy children, children from wealthy families, you know, there's different ways of going about it. But what you're trying to offer is that people that want to be successful in business need coaching.
Yeah.
Like if they're managers and they're new managers, they need to know how to manage people.
Yeah.
Or they need to know how to set their agendas, how to get things done, how to communicate with upper management, you know, how to build their portfolio, how to invest in their career, et cetera.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. So it sounds like there's really two things you're touching up on, which is like, number one, how to actually develop the skill of coaching to help someone get some type of results in their life or sport, right? And then two, the economic side of it, which is like, how would you actually make money from it? And so the first thing that I really like that you shared is the idea of perhaps becoming an assistant coach on a sports team if you have no experience. And the reason why I really like this for my listeners, I want you to really get this, because like at the beginning, one of the things that I have noticed life coaches struggling with is like really wanting to get clients, having a hard time selling themselves because they don't really believe they can help someone get results. And it's usually because it's lack of experience. And so it's, you know, the first step is like, are you willing to be a coach in an organization that's not yours, whether that is you being an assistant coach for an athletic team, or you being a life coach for a nonprofit organization, or you being like literally just actually finding spaces that you can, that have the students that you want to serve, or the target market that you want to serve, and putting yourself in that position to be able to gain experience and develop the skill of coaching. But then number two is like actually asking yourself, how do I want to make money from this long term? So, you know, one of the things you're saying that I feel like is actually pretty interesting that I'd never actually considered, and I don't know if many have considered this, is like, and this is perhaps unique to me because I played sports growing up. So for someone who wants to do coaching and they decide to get into, you know, I'm going to be an assistant coach for an athletic team, and in addition to that, I'm going to build a coaching program on the side that I am going to hopefully grow a successful business out of, whether it's a nonprofit or not. But there's a lot of things going on here. You're gaining the experience, you're gaining the skills. Not only that, but you have now put yourself in a position to like cultivate a network, because you're working for the sports team you're working for, which means you're working in a school, which also means you have access to educational resources and people that you didn't have access to before you went and you joined the team that you joined, or the nonprofit that you joined. And so, you know, and then obviously you have that income, and then you can like add to that income through the side business that you've created, whether that is the nonprofit or not. So thank you for sharing that. Because
one more thing too,
go ahead.
Forgot to mention, you know, well, with sports, it's not just school teams, probably more money in travel ball. Where parents, and then like in wealthier communities more so, the parents are willing, they're frustrated, their kids like maybe using fentanyl sometimes, you know, in their, and they've got good jobs, but their kids off out of pocket, right? So those parents, you could go to parent meetings, you could get on parent newsletters and advertise your services as a life coach for teens. And then life coaching in the travel ball. Because travel ball parents, because they have to have money for those kids to be in these programs.
Thank you for sharing that. What are some of the personal development practices you have that has helped you grow as a leader?
Well, you know, really, it's been a long process, but I have several books. I have a leadership book list about transformation. I read a lot about transforming organizations, about building culture. And you understand about how to build culture. And I almost feel like the CEO's main job is to be the culture creator. The head coach's job of a sports team is to create the culture of that team. You got assistant coaches to teach skills, but there's somebody that has to hold space for how are we going to treat each other? How are we going to approach things? You know, who can inspire and remind everyone what our focus is, right? So I've read a lot of books on leadership development, and then on a lot of personal development books, you know, like like Daniel Goleman's books, by the way, very good books on primal leadership, social intelligence, focus, emotional intelligence, very good books to read. The 1 Minute Manager books, Situational Leadership Coaching by Blanchard as well. You know, several books like this. There's a book called There's No Such Thing as a Bad Kid by Charlie Appelstein about dealing with kids who've been through orphanages and how to turn them around with really innovative and fun ways, and how to change systems. But learning how to build culture is really important. And then individually, how to, you know, getting right, you know, having a belief system, of having integrity, having values, you know, being really clear, and then intentionally living up to those values, intentions. And then when you have your trauma gets in the way of you operating right, working on that inner management, whether it be the power of now with Eckhart Tolle's book, you know, being present as a way of mitigating trauma, or The Untethered Soul, which is another book. They're almost kind of similar, talking, but just talk about the same thing differently, like releasing trauma through the breath. But how do you get powered up? How do you become your authentic self?
Right.
You know, you get rid of the conditioning that other people gave you that was negative, and how to reparent yourself. How do you get yourself right? So that you can be really, because I really believe walking your talk. You know, you the better that I am, then the more effective I am.
Absolutely. So it sounds like for you, reading is a major personal development practice, as well as being clear on your core values and then being intentional about upholding those core values every day in your life. Did I get that correct?
Accountability. Yes, and having an accountability too, because like a coach yourself, or a sponsor in 12-step programs, or therapists, you know, but because we get off track. Like, it's not easy for a person to keep themselves on track, right?
Right.
It's also good to have someone to check in with. And then if you're in a relationship or you have really good friends or you have children, they can reflect you back. And if you're learning, you can learn a lot from the people you relate to. They will teach you about what you're doing that's cool and not cool. And you can learn more about what you need to work on. If you're truly willing to become super powered up, I would say if you want to become a really good life coach, you want to be powerful at it. You don't want to be, you're not going to make any money if you're not good at it. You know? And the other thing is to teach. So I do a lot of workshops on how to coach and how to work with at-risk youth and how to set up programs and how to do motivational interviewing and how to talk to school sites and set things up, but particularly on how to motivate and help young people heal. So to teach what you've learned, or to tell a friend, or it's really important that you teach also, because you learn from teaching a lot.
Absolutely. If you don't mind, share with my listeners where they can connect with you if they were interested in learning how to learning your life coaching methods. Like, where can they connect with you?
Well, the easiest way is on my email, which is astrengthsapproach@gmail.com.
Awesome. I will also include your email in the show notes as well. So with you being a reader for personal development, what is one book that has helped you in your entrepreneurial journey that you would like to share? What's a book that comes to mind?
Well, I'd say it was Primal Leadership by Daniel Goleman.
Okay.
Six different tools for leadership. And the importance of the energy, the person with the strongest energy is the leader. Even if you're just like you carrying the water for the team, if you are totally centered and powerful as a leader, so a kid walks in the classroom and is screaming, but you respond with, "So hey, what's going on? All right, you want to wait outside? You don't have to come in right yet. Take a minute to take care of yourself." You know, when they're yelling at you, and I'm umpiring, and I'm a referee for football, and I'm umpiring for both college and high school baseball also, because I get to practice.
Yeah,
I'm preaching right here.
Right.
People are coming at me. You know, half the people didn't like what I just called. Right. I'm trying to what's your question, coach? You know, let me make sure I understand you right. So primal leadership really gave me the idea of, number one, powerfulest tool is visionary. Mm. Number two, powerfulest tool is coaching. Mm. And so I use the coaching method to supervise my coaches. Mm. And so that helped me. And then being able to hold that energy and that vision for people, when I would talk to principals and I talked to behavioral health managers at the school sites, and I wanted to set my program up and get it running, mm. you know, being able to speak their language, mm. the primal leadership, I think it's just a great book to read about what not to do. So micromanaging and commanding are the two worst things for culture. And then affiliating is really important, to be able to affiliate, and then facilitate. So being able, like with my coaches or even with the kids, the first example I gave you was a facilitation model. What do you like about weed? What are you don't concerned about weed? What do you want to do about it? I'm not telling you, but my questions are leading you to your own conclusions.
Right.
So facilitating. So this book and the way it's laid out, I found it to be very powerful for me. And when there's no such thing as a bad kid, mm-hmm. using a total strengths-based approach, you know, what's good about the kid was really powerful. So combining like those, I'll just use those for right this moment, because everything I take what I like from everything, and everything that I do is a synthesis of the best of what everybody else gave me from my point of view. Mm-hmm. But there's no such thing as bad kids, strengths-based, you know, believing in the good in people and talking to that, mm. like, you know, the principle continually, you know, and then, you know, having, and also what I liked about primal leadership was having that vision that you can communicate. You know, people throw things at you, but you know what you're about. When you have a mission statement, I just navigated around different superintendent, different principal, you know, whatever they tried, because I'm about helping young people who or don't feel good about who they are. It doesn't matter how I go about it, but that's what I'm doing. So I'm just going to navigate through the obstacles. So having a really powerful mission statement. Mm-hmm. So those two books, among others, but.
Yeah, I would definitely be including both of those books in the show notes as well as additional resources. Thank you for sharing. So what's next for you? What is your vision for the next 3 to 5 years?
No, that's a good question. So currently, I've been doing the workshops, I'm working in sports. I'm semi-retired now, and I'm working on me. I want to become really powered up, because one thing I'm really concerned about, Joe, is our climate, the earth, and humanity, how we treat each other. And so I spend time thinking of brainstorming on ways to make the climate better. So for example, if we all bought bulk and we got our water in bulk, and we could put it in our own bottle, and we're not throwing plastic bottles into the ocean, and we're not throwing, you know, that's huge. If we switch to a plant-based diet instead of an animal diet, look at all the water, all the land, all of the labor that goes with the animals. Mm. If it was a plant-based diet, it would be way better for the planet. You know, I just like think about that. And then I think about, I would like to do, I'm working on me, and I want to see kind of like what manifests, which direction to take. I would definitely like to do the adventure camp for young people. I want to continue to train people. I want to inspire. I want to create a movement where people treat each other better. I would like to have park space in inner city. I mean, part of the mental health problem that we have is that people live in high density housing with no park and no good food. I want to advocate for these things, and I want to inspire. I know I can't do it by myself, but I want to see if I can find young people and inspire them to want to take the charge of this and get going. Because once you've got bills to pay, it's kind of hard to be trying to do things that are for the good of everyone.
Right.
You got to focus on making sure you can pay your car note, your mortgage and stuff like that. So young people are kind of fresh and right. If you don't have those responsibilities, and then if they can create innovative ways and funding. And most of all, we have to get wealthy people with a lot of land and a lot of property and a lot of power to come with us because they have the greatest impact on our world. And so to educate them and to inspire them to want to be more in touch with their own humanity. They live in those faraway places and detach from, and everyone's an object instead of, you know, a human. And so it's a big thing, but these are the things I want to make the biggest impact on the world that I can, in the most effective way. And at the same time, enjoy my life too, because I've worked hard to get to this point, and I've always worked hard. And so I'm actually enjoying like going hiking, going camping, you know, going to the river, and I'll go do a game. Then I'll go to the river. I'll do a workshop and I'll go to the ocean, you know, and I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying living. I'm enjoying walking my talk about, I want to live my life without having to work so hard.
Thank you.
But I also want to do some great things and inspire other people to do them.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And with your vision and accountability, I'm sure you're going to make the impact you were called to make. So thank you for sharing your vision. If there was a principle or practice that you weren't able to share today and would like to share, what would it be?
I would just say work upon yourself so you can be happy.
I like that. Thank you. Thank you for joining me on the podcast today, Robert.
It was a pleasure, Joe. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And to my listeners, I really do hope that you take something from today's interview and implement it in your daily path. We have covered a lot today, a lot of meaningful information that could truly make a difference in anyone's life. So I really hope you take something today and you use it. Until next time, have a blessed day. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Daily Path Podcast. If you would like to launch your own podcast show to expand your reach, grow your network, and sign more premium clients for your business, visit dailypathacademy.com to learn how we can help you launch an impactful podcast that changes lives around the world and acquires high-ticket clients for your business. That's dailypathacademy.com.